the day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. We don't get a lot of happy endings in news, but it's summertime and you can get bad news from a billion other places. So let's kick things off with the story of two Michigan women and a 9-year-old boy who survived an unlikely adventure. The group was tubing on the Muskegon River, and when they didn't return, and then it stretched into 3 days missing. Most feared the worst, but they were found alive. They had resorted to eating tree bark and ants to survive during their 3 days in the wilderness. Here's the story told through the body cams of conservation officers who tracked them down in a remote, heavily wooded area.
Make some noise!
This all started on Tuesday night around 4 p.m. when these tubers had taken off from the Maple Island boat launch. But they didn't have a destination very clearly planned out, and one of their phones became wet and inoperable. They had floated down river and then obviously became lost. Because they didn't have a float plan, they were not reported missing until the following day with approximately a 24-hour lapse from when they had left. And it just became a giant operation of man-tracking them down through the woods to locate them.
Hey, bud, stop.
Stop, hold on.
Hey, yo.
But what we saw was there was a path in the grass, and all of the grass was tipped over leading towards shore, which told us that they had crawled from that log jam to shore, and we could see the direction they went. And then we started finding footprints and broken branches, and we were able to basically use the environment to kind of tell the story of where they had walked.
I was going to say, once we started track and we got into the marsh a short distance and started calling out to see if we could get a response, and after a couple of call-outs, we heard a response way back in the marsh, and we knew at that point there was a high probability at least one person, you know, that was who we were looking for, and they were alive. The closer we got, we were able to determine there was a kid and a female responding. It wasn't until we got right up on scene that we knew everybody was alive at that point.
Oh my God.
Their phones were too waterlogged to be helpful, but in most unsafe situations, there's a tech that could have helped. Here's the latest in tech for back to school season from KRLD in Dallas.
A lot of parents are spending and shelling out for new technology for their students. Michael Garfield. So, Michael, what is the hottest piece of technology this year?
This is something that we didn't have to worry about when we went to school. I grew up in, you know, Dallas ISD, and, you know, we had, you know, pens, papers, and zipper bags. But welcome to the 21st century. You know, I could say this tongue-in-cheek, David, but a lot of students certainly going back to college. It's the app you may want. You may want to have something like a ChatGPT or an AI. Obviously, it's controversial when it comes to helping writing papers, but you know what? As an assistant, it can help in some aspects.
Now, when we talk about the tech that they have available and, you know, the apps or whatnot that they can even use on their phone, they're not going to be able to do that with this new cell phone ban. So how important is other types of technology, perhaps tablets and laptops this year?
No, you're right, Kristen. Exactly. The Texas ban right now, it's up to the different districts to actually say yes or no, you can use your phone. It's also the tablets, your smartwatches. But when it comes to, let's talk about college kids. If you're going into a dorm, you have to think dorms are relatively small, so you need all-in-one devices. You know, get a laptop that's large enough to watch TV or video, your YouTube or whatever. That's number one. You want to think about a smart speaker, you know, maybe an Amazon Echo Dot. They're relatively inexpensive for like $50 or so. And I always recommend active noise canceling headphones or earbuds, because odds are you're going to be having a roommate. You just want to shut everything out so you can listen to whatever, so you don't have to, you know, tune into what your roommate is listening to.
You know, school today is a whole lot different than just 20 years ago, where parents actually do have to worry about getting technology as part of their back to school shopping. And that's got to change as far as everything, including saving for back to school.
Yeah, the saving for back to school is big. Listen, there's a lot of apps over that I recommend when it comes to money management. And a lot of these things were free, and some of, you know, you could start socking some money away. But you need to start thinking about college much earlier than we used to, just because of the expenses. And it's not even college, David. You got about high school right now. I do remember that we were at the grade school or high school, and there was a little list. You had to bring some Kleenex and some maybe some glue or paste or whatever it is. But nowadays, there are some high schools that actually want you to bring laptops, and a specific laptop. Is it going to be a Microsoft operating system? Do you have to have an Apple operating system? So you have to follow the rules, but the fact is cost is such a major factor that versus, you know, a generation ago.
Yeah, when we talk about the costs, are there good rebate deals or just refurbishing options that won't break the bank?
I like the fact that you suggested the refurbishing. Refurbishing, these are slightly or gently used products. And if you look across the board in terms of technology, you can find a lot of it. There's refurbished computers, there are refurbished laptops, and you could save a lot on this thing. And so you can just do a quick Google search, and there's also apps out there. But in terms of newer gear for back-to-school specials, I think laptops are almost a must, certainly in college, you know, maybe get down to the high school, maybe even grade school. I saw one. It was an Asus, A-S-U-S. It's one of my favorite laptops I've been using for years. Now, it's not a Microsoft operating system. It's a Chromebook, which is just as fine to do typical word processing and surfing the web. $159, and I think it may have been about Walmart, but this thing is feather light. It's about 1 pound and probably like a, you know, maybe 3/4 inches thick, very light. But look right now between now and Labor Day for these back-to-school specials.
Especially, you're talking about Chromebooks. They typically are not the most powerful computers, so they can't necessarily play games on them. That these are really the proper back-to-school laptops for kids because they don't have a hard drive on them.
It's not only the hard drive, and what I explain to people on my radio show, my TV segments also, difference between Chromebooks and a typical computer that we're used to. You don't have to license the Microsoft name to make it the Microsoft Windows operating system. I mean, the thing is, though, you've got major manufacturers making Chromebooks. You've got Asus, you've got HP, same thing, but when they put Microsoft Windows, that's what you're paying the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars extra for. The Chromebook, which is made by Google, it's kind of an Android operating system, that makes it really inexpensive. But if you're looking for a grade school, maybe some early high school, because kids can drop these things, they can break. I mean, you can get these things, as I said, certainly for under $200, and they're not powerful to run a video game or something high-end like that. But if you're surfing the web, doing a word processing, you're writing a paper, I think they're perfect.
And none of this stuff is cheap. Here's how much parents are spending from WWJ in Detroit.
A new poll finds that most parents say back-to-school items are noticeably more expensive this year than last year. Joining us live now to break down the numbers is ABC News polling director Emily Guskin in Washington. And Emily, let's start with the big picture. What kind of numbers are we seeing in this poll?
We asked parents throughout the country in our first ever GMA Ipsos poll of parents how much they expect to spend on 5 different categories of back-to-school shopping. And they told us they were about to spend almost $900 per kid.
So, Emily, expecting to spend that much, nearly $900 per child, that is a massive stretch for a family budget. How are parents adapting to these higher prices? Are they cutting back on the non-essentials or shopping differently this year? Expound on that.
Absolutely. So we asked people if they were noticing higher spending, and 68% said that spending looked more expensive this year than back to school shopping last year. But only 4 in 10 expect to spend more money. So even though prices are expensive for them and they're noticing they're higher, 46% are spending the same amount and 13% are spending less than they have before. We found the biggest category that they're spending on was items for after school activities, including sports. That was $337 on average across the country, with the second category being clothing and shoes at $245. School supplies, those, you know, new backpacks and school lunchboxes were at $118, followed by technology, including tablets, laptops, and calculators at $102, and finally books at $52.
Emily, I'm kind of curious, did the polling show any major splits among parents? For example, are parents of high schoolers feeling the pinch more than those with kids, say, entering kindergarten?
Good question. We found a lot of people saying that they noticed higher prices across ages, but they're spending differently, and those with different incomes are really where you see it. Parents with household incomes under $50,000 are spending $650 on average, and those with incomes of $100,000 or more are spending $960 on average. So that's a big difference there.
Looking at the overall consumer sentiment, Emily, how does this back-to-school price shock compare to how parents felt about their general everyday spending over the past year?
So I don't have data on parents and spending generally, but they seem to look a lot like Americans overall who are not happy with the economy. They're pessimistic about it going forward. They think prices are too high. They're cutting back on essentials, groceries. They're cutting back on things they feel like they need because gas prices are so much higher. This is a tough time for a lot of Americans, and we're seeing majorities, even across parties, saying that things are more expensive for back-to-school shopping.
Speaking of family budgets, what do they look like these days, and how achievable do people think the American dream still is? Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
More and more Americans are falling behind on their home loans, their student loans, even their car loans, as affordability remains a big concern. Giacomo Santangelo, senior lecturer in economics at Fordham University. You know, there are so many people who are underwater on loans. And I think we think of mortgages first, like the mortgage crisis, but now, and student loans too, but now even car payments. We're digging holes of debt that I don't know if we can ever get out of.
Look, you know, a lot of people believe in the sanctity of the business cycle. We go through a period of recession. We come out of the recession. We go into an inflationary period. And then we, you know, we return to full employment and then we go into a recession. So, we, you know, that's kind of the thing. We ride that wave. But we've been riding this inflationary portion for far longer than we should, you know, we were recovering from COVID. And the economy was, you know, was getting over the supply chain issues, and things were looking up. But then with the, you know, the policies of deportation, which is increasing housing costs and food costs, and the war, which is increasing energy costs, you know, this inflation is really doing a job on people. And I think one of the big issues we have is the disconnect between different groups of people in the United States right now. You know, you read a lot about the K-shaped economy because there are people who are doing fine right now, but then a much larger group of people who are not. And social media is really supporting because, you know, you go on social media and you see, oh, people are doing okay. You're looking at the stock market. It seems to be doing okay. But your day-to-day struggle with trying to, you know, make ends meet is really putting a lot of unnecessary strain on the average consumer.
You know, I'll ask you to explain this, as I do so often with guests. Explain this to me like I'm a five-year-old. Why are 401ks doing so well, yet people are struggling to buy groceries?
Well, I think it's interesting because you turn around, you have to ask the question, how many people are, you know, lucky enough to have those 401ks? How many people are we really talking about? Is that representative of the young people in the United States? Is that something which, you know, Gen Z even cares about, right? Are they thinking about saving for retirement, or are they overwhelmed by the struggle to actually find a job? So, you know, it's very interesting to always go back and say, what is the indicator that people are using to measure the health of the economy? Because the thing that affects the largest group of people is what's happening at the gas pump. What's happening when you turn around and, you know, thankfully it's the summertime. What happens when it gets cold? If fuel costs are still high, that's going to translate to, you know, trying to heat your home during the winter. And, you know, of course, when we're talking about default on homes and, you know, default on student loans and default on cars, you know, the automobile is really one of the most important aspects in the household, because that's how you get to work. And if you live in an area, God forbid, that does not have a safe, healthy public transit system, you know, you have to make those car payments. And, you know, you and I have discussed over the course of the last year various different things which have led us to this conversation. We talked about blue dot fever, how, you know, people stop going to concerts suddenly. Well, of course they stop going to concerts because they have to make their car payments. You know, people, you know, concerned about what's going to happen now that there are fewer airlines, budget airlines going out of business. We had that conversation several months ago. And now we see that airfare has gone up. When did it go up? During the summer, when people want to go on vacation, right? So all of these things are leading us to this point where we no longer ask the question, what is worth spending money on? And then we went through the stage of what's worth going into debt for. Now it's, I have all this debt. What am I willing to default on?
Hmm. It's interesting you mentioned younger people, Giacomo. Our reporters who have been working similar stories talk to younger people who say that the part of the American dream that includes buying a home just seems unattainable, unreachable to them. And so that plays with the psyche. It's like, well, everybody wants the American dream, but there's a segment of it that they don't think they'll ever achieve.
Yes, you are absolutely correct. And I mentioned before, briefly, social media. There are lots of memes that talk about the 1970s, or 60s and 70s, when, you know, so many people with a college education were able to go off, get a job, one wage earner in the house, able to pay off the house, pay for groceries, pay for gas, pay for everything's paid for, and then still have the ability to save some. But then something broke in the late 70s when we had, you know, the energy crisis. And then we went through, you know, we now live in a time when we're talking about an entire generation of renters, not a generation of owners. Again, you and I have discussed in the past all of these various different subscription services. There are subscription services for clothing. There are subscription services to go to the movies. There are subscription services where you can turn around and, oh, look, I went off, I bought some nice clothes. Now I'm just, you know, things are tight. What do I have in my home that I can sell? And we see these commercials on social media, or these commercials on YouTube, these commercials on TV now that are basically encouraging people to not really be owners. And we're trying to normalize that the new American dream is instability, right? Where, you know, so many people used to believe, oh, the full-time job, that's the way to go. And now it's, no, you have to have side gigs. You have to drive, you know, for a ride share. You have to do food delivery. You have to do those things just so you can make ends meet beyond having a full-time job that's providing you with health care. Now imagine all those people who are having difficulty getting that first full-time job. You know, that's the problem that young people are facing. The University of Michigan this morning in the Wall Street Journal reported that they're going to stop giving out letter grades to first-year students because they don't want to upset their GPAs, because the GPA is so important in finding that first job. So this is something that young people are having a completely different experience than you or I did. And so when we're having conversations about this, that's something that we have to remember. That K-shaped economy, that you have some people who are prospering right now, but then a huge group of people that are really struggling.
I wonder if you notice a snowball effect in all this. Okay, I'm struggling. Yeah, I'd like to buy a new big screen TV, but you know what? I'm going to hold off. Well, that affects the people who sell the big screen TV, the people who make the big screen TV, who ship it and everything else.
Yes.
All of a sudden, they are having trouble paying the rent. Mm-hmm. They might even lose their job because there's less demand. Is there a snowball effect here?
Absolutely. And we've seen companies preparing for this. This is why you have those clothing rental companies that will basically partner with, you know, companies like Zara and H&M and Old Navy and say, look, you're having difficulty selling clothes. Fine. If people don't have the money to buy the clothes, why don't you give us the clothes and we will literally share with you the money that we make renting them out to young people. So, It's things like that. It's the move toward, you know, not buying a car, but doing rideshare. And, you know, in the not too distant future, we shouldn't be surprised to see major car manufacturers partnering with the rideshare companies to try and make up for their lack of sales. You know, when was the last time you went to buy a big screen TV? They make it very easy for you to get it now with no down payment and not having to make payments for the next 2 years. You know, so it's this is something that it's not so much about the snowball. It's more along the lines of what have companies, what infrastructure of companies already set up to prepare themselves for what they see coming down the line.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.